It was my first day in Western Hill Medical Care, and I drove up the mountain, reaching minutes before dawn. The hospital looked like it had seen it all. The head nurse showed me around and briefed me on my responsibilities. She was showing me the different wards when another caregiver came rushing. He looked young, but very frightened. Catching his panting breath, he told the head nurse about some patient who had just had an episode of incontinence. The head nurse asked the name of the patient, and the minute the caregiver uttered her name, I could see lines forming on her forehead. Both of them discussed for a minute who will attend to this patient, because the one who takes care of her is on leave. Thinking it was my chance to shine on the very first day, I recommended myself. Are you sure? The head nurse asked me. I chuckled as if it was a very silly question. I've had training on attending old and disabled patients, so I know what I'm doing. The head nurse gestured for the caregiver to take me to the patient so I could give her a bath and a change of clothes. As I started to follow the caregiver, the head nurse called out to me and warned me. She told me to be careful. On our way to the patient's room, I casually asked the caregiver about her, and he said the patient is a bit weird. On normal days, she keeps to herself, but sometimes she can get violent, which is why they always keep her physically restrained.
She's been through a lot. Her abusive husband tortured her for years, until one day he came back home drunk and beat her badly. And then he killed himself, too. If you ask me, she's way better here than she was with him.
The caregiver exhaled, and I realized things are about to get pretty serious around here. We stopped outside a small room. Inside the room, I could see a bed with its white sheets covered in fecal matter. A smell of urine, waste, and perspiration hit my nostrils right away. I covered my nose, muttering,
"That's some strong smell."
On the bed sat this frail, average-height woman with her hands tied to her body. She had long, stringy gray hair and an expressionless face. Her eyes were wide like a night owl.
"Dorothy, this is Linjin. She's going to help you, okay? Can you promise me you'll cooperate?"
Dorothy nodded her head up and down, then shifted her gaze towards me. She didn't speak, didn't blink. The caregiver pulled out this wheelchair and I placed a towel on it. Together, we helped Dorothy get down from the bed and take a sit on the chair. I was instructed to unlock her handcuffs only during the shower. Once done, I shouldn't wait a second to put her back in restraints. I've dealt with violent patients in the past, so I was confident I would handle it. Also, Dorothy was very skinny, and I'm stronger than her in every aspect. I watched the caregiver leave to attain other duties. When I looked down, my eyes met with Dorothy's. She was staring at me. I gave an awkward smile and took her to the shower room. I turned on the warm water and began gently rinsing her arms.
"You'll feel better after this, Dorothy. Nice and clean, okay?"
No answer. Her eyes were open, but empty, like windows with no curtains, just darkness behind them. I knelt to rinse her leg when Dorothy whispered,
"It's still inside the wall."
I looked up, confused.
"What did you say?"
I asked. She tilted her head at an unnatural angle, her wet hair clinging to her face.
"It helped me slice his throat in one go,"
she murmured.
"Do you know how people bleed when their veins are cut?"
I took a cautious step back, my heart picking up pace.
Dorothy? Are you all right?"
She smiled, blinking her eyes like a robot, but it wasn't a smile of relief. It was something sinister.
"If I had it with me, I would have cut you all open."
The lights above flickered. My breath caught in my throat. The bathroom had no windows, just a single fluorescent light overhead.
I think we're done here.
Then she started screaming. She thrashed in the chair, shaking the handles violently. Her face twisted with pure rage. Her screams were blood-curdling. I froze in shock. The caregiver came rushing in, but those 5 minutes felt like forever. Dorothy was sedated and taken back to her room. Later, the caregiver tried to console me. He said it happens, that patients sometimes lash out. But when I told him what Dorothy said, he went pale. I asked what was wrong, and that's when he told me. The murder weapon was never found, but based on the clean, deep cut in her husband's neck, authorities believed it was a scalpel, something swift and sharp. It's been months now, and I still work here. But ever since that day, I haven't slept the same, because part of me wonders, is that weapon still hidden somewhere? Inside some walls? Because I don't think Dorothy's lying. Do you? I felt it before the elevator even reached the 37th floor. A tight, twisting knot just under my ribs. Probably just first-day jitters. New job, new city, new everything. But the second those elevator doors slid open, I knew I'd made a mistake. She was the first thing I saw, sitting at reception, clicking those blood-red nails against her keyboard like she'd been waiting for me. Vanessa Miller. Our eyes locked. She smiled. That same slow, devious smirk she flashed me the night I told her it was over, right before she picked up a kitchen knife and whispered that one of us was about to bleed. "What are you doing here?" I choked. She tilted her head playful and giggled.
"I work here, silly. Isn't it crazy?"
I forced myself to keep walking past her, past the weight in my chest. People work with their exes all the time, even the unhinged ones. A thick stack of presentations was already waiting at my desk, along with the instruction notes. "$1 million accounts, due by end of day. Don't screw it up." I threw myself into the work. For a couple of hours, I even forgot she was out there, watching. It might have been 11 o'clock when I stepped away for a tea break. 10 minutes, tops. When I got back, every file on my system was corrupted. I stared at the screen like maybe I was dreaming. Tried rebooting, reopening, recovering, nothing. By noon, the phones were ringing off the hook. Clients were screaming. Greg's voice came through my headset, tight with anger. "My office, now!" "Every woman in the department received explicit messages from your email, Mr. Reynolds," he said, sliding printouts across the desk. "I didn't write these," I pleaded. "It's Vanessa, she's my ex." Greg was frantic. "You've been here 6 hours and created nothing but problems. Fix everything you've broken before leaving tonight. I don't care if you stay all night." As I left his office, I swear I'd heard a giggle. Slumped shoulders, I buried myself back in work, pretending everything had already gone to hell. By 7, the office was empty. Just me, my monitor's cold glow, and that thick kind of silence where every keyboard click sounds like a gunshot. I was digging through my email settings when the lights flickered before it went out totally. Not just at my desk, the whole floor. Even the emergency exit signs blinked out like dying embers. Then, a dim glow flickered to life in a corner. I froze. It was a flashlight, not mine. And right there, on the inside of the glass wall, was smeared and wet, red, a question she had always asked me. "You promise you love me, baby?" My breath caught. My heart pounded so hard I felt it in my teeth. She'd been right here, waiting. I spun around, grabbed my bag, and bolted for the elevators. Dead. Tried the stairwell. Locked. Every goddamn exit was sealed. I was contemplating my next move when from the dark, her voice floated out, sing-song soft.
"Remember our first night together? You said we'll be together forever." "Such a liar, Ethan."
I dropped behind a row of cubicles, trying to quiet my breath. My hand landed on something solid, a stapler. Not ideal, but heavy enough.
"You know what's funny?"
She was close.
"I got you this job. Saw your resume. Told the director how brilliant you were. I handpicked this office for us."
A beam of light swept the floor. I crawled, elbows and knees burning as I moved away from the voice.
"You think blocking my number would stop me? I watched you for 3 years, Ethan. Your LinkedIn, your socials, your sweet mom still likes my comments."
I made it to the break room, grabbed the heaviest thing I could find, metal thermos, just as the flashlight swung toward me. She laughed, That same brittle, high-pitched laugh that used to echo through my apartment walls when I ignored her calls. But she'd still show up. You're crazy! I shivered.
No.
She spat.
Crazy was when I waited outside your building for 6 days straight, just to see your face. This is love.
The beam found me. There she was, in the doorway. Box cutter in one hand, the flashlight in the other. Blood-red lips parted sinfully.
I've been planning this for months.
She whispered, stepping closer.
Do you know how hard it is to hack into a building's security? The things we do for love, right?
I hurled the stapler at her face and barreled past her, slamming her into the wall. She didn't cry out. She laughed, giddy, like she was proud of me. I ran blindly and landed in the conference room. The fire escape was just across the gap, but the glass wouldn't budge. I grabbed a chair, smashing it again and again, until the window exploded outward. Cold air rushed in. City lights blurred through my stinging eyes. Behind me, the footsteps hastened.
Where are you gonna go, Ethan?
She stood at the broken window, blood dripping from her temple. She wiped it and licked.
That's a 37th floor drop. You jump, you die. You stay, we talk this out.
I backed up to the edge, legs swinging out. This isn't talking. This is fucking insane. You're mad.
You made me mad.
She shrieked and lunged. I didn't decide to jump. My body did. 1 second, I was at the window. The next, I was flying. The gap was so much wider than I remembered. I hit the fire escape hard. Steel grated against my palms. My leg screamed. Something tore. But I didn't care. I was alive. I passed out seconds later, and when I woke up next, I was in the hospital, and Vanessa was locked up. The security had heard the crash and stepped in. They arrested her immediately. Breaking, hacking, assault, attempted murder. The charges were inescapable. My boss apologized, begging me not to sue the organization, and promised he'd take care of the hospital expenses, but I had quit anyway. It was my first day at Lux, and I was assigned the storage room duty. Nobody lasts long down there, Grayson mumbled, handing me the clipboard and never once looking me in the eye. Something about those mannequins freak people out. And soon I'd know why. The storage room was a nightmare. This massive space with lights that kept flickering. Shelves stretched into narrow aisles that seemed to go on forever, and scattered upon them were the mannequins. Everywhere, standing in corners, hanging from metal hooks, or just body parts thrown into bins waiting to be put together.
Just sort them by gender, then by size, Grayson said, already backing away toward the stairs. And try finishing before dark.
Then he added,
oh, and ignore any weird noises, old building and all.
The door slammed shut, and I swear it sounded like someone laughing at me. For the first hour, I sorted mannequins into sections, trying to ignore how their faces seemed to track my movement. The store's playlist booming overhead only made the silence between songs creepier. Then I heard it, tapping from somewhere deep in the room, like fingernails on metal. Tap, tap, tap. I stopped, holding a mannequin torso awkwardly in my arms. Hello? My voice cracked as it echoed faintly in the space. I peered around, listening to my heartbeat in my ears. Dead silence. Maybe some rats scurried behind the shelves. But then, what I saw made my heart drop. A mannequin, a male one, with the unsettlingly realistic face, glared at me from the end of the aisle. I knew I'd left it in the men's section. I remembered the exact spot. And yet, there it was, lurking quietly, as if waiting to pounce. Pretty sure I moved you already, I muttered, grabbing its shoulders. That's when I noticed the eyes. They changed. Before, they were just flat painted eyes. Now they looked deep. Don't spook yourself, moron. I scoffed at myself. I picked it up again, avoiding those eyes, and hauled it back to the men's section. By late afternoon, I was totally on edge. I'd found mannequins in places I definitely hadn't left them.
A female one with a cracked face by the elevator. A child-sized one sitting on a shelf I couldn't even reach without a ladder. Each time I found one, my hands shook worse putting it back. During my break, I called up the stairs.
Mr. Grayson, I think someone else is down here.
He appeared, looking tense.
Nobody else except you has access today, Alex.
But the mannequins
are exactly where they've always been.
He cut me off.
It's just the light playing tricks on you.
Something in his voice made me pause. He knew. Whatever was happening, he knew. As closing time hit, the lights dimmed. I rushed to finish, desperate to leave. Then, all the lights went out. Total darkness. Not even emergency lights. I grabbed my phone, turning on the flashlight with trembling fingers. The beam hit a mannequin standing directly in front of me, the one with the glass eyes. I swung my light around. More mannequins surrounded me now. At least a dozen, arranged in a circle, all facing me.
This isn't funny!
I yelled, my voice breaking.
Mr. Grayson!
No answer. The store was closed. I was alone. Or that's what I wanted to believe. I tried the freight elevator. Dead. The stairs, then. I'd get out through the stairs. The beam of my flashlight revealed the path was blocked. Mannequins stood shoulder to shoulder before the door, their blank faces somehow accusatory in the harsh light. They only move when you're not looking. The realization hit me like a physical blow. Every time I'd turned away, blinked, looked elsewhere, they'd move closer. My phone battery flashed a warning, 10% remaining. I backed against a concrete pillar, moving my light constantly, trying to watch all of them at once. An impossible task.
What do you want?
I whispered. My light flickered, dimming momentarily. In that split second, the mannequin with glass eyes moved, just a twitch of its head, angling slightly to the left, toward the far corner of the room, where a human-shaped shadow stood that wasn't a mannequin at all. It was Mr. Grayson.
I'm sorry, Alex, he said, stepping forward. They need someone new. They always do.
What are you talking about?
My voice was barely audible.
They let me go after I gave them you.
His laugh was hollow.
That was our agreement. 20 years down here, watching over them, and they finally chose a replacement.
You're insane,
I whispered. But even as I said it, I saw his eyes, glassy, reflective, like marbles embedded in flesh. My phone died with a pathetic beep, plunging us into absolute darkness. I felt it immediately, movement all around me, the soft scrape of plastic limbs against concrete, the whisper of mannequin hands reaching out.
Don't fight it.
Mr. Grayson's voice drifted from somewhere in the darkness.
It doesn't hurt. Not really. You just become like them. Silent. Watching. Waiting for the next person.
Something cold brushed against my cheek. Plastic fingers, gently exploring. I ran blindly, crashing into shelves, mannequin parts raining down around me. My hands found a door. Not the stairs, but the emergency exit to the alley behind the store. I slammed my body against it repeatedly until the lock gave way. Night air rushed in as I tumbled out, gasping, into the alleyway. I didn't stop running until I reached the main street, the store's neon sign still glowing in the distance. I never went back for my final paycheck, but sometimes, walking past high-end clothing stores, I glimpsed the mannequins in their windows, posed elegantly, dressed in $1,000 outfits. And I swear, one of them has Mr. Grayson's face now. Its glass eyes following me as I hurry past. They're patient, these silent ones. They can wait. After all, I still need a job.